Okay, I've got 9:09 a.m. We'll go ahead and call this regular meeting of the Coryell County Commissioners Court to order, noting that all members of the court are present. For those of you that are here in person, if you've got an electronic device, we'd ask that you place it on silence at this time. And for those of you that are participating by Zoom, we'd ask that you place your device on mute till such time that you'd need to address the court. We'll begin this morning with a word of prayer. God, our Father in heaven, we come before you today to ask for the forgiveness of our sins. And Lord, we're so grateful for the rains that you've given us in the cooler weather. Lord, we ask that you continue to watch over and protect those here on earth that serve us and protect us, our first responders, our medical personnel, our military forces around the world, as well as our local law enforcement and firefighters. And Lord, as always, we're going to ask that you place your hand of wisdom and guidance on this court, so we may do here on earth what honors you in heaven. We ask all these things in your son's holy name. Amen.
Amen.
We pledge to our flags. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible. Well, the next item on our agenda is the public forum. Citizens may address the court on any matter other than matters concerning county personnel or matters under litigation. Each citizen will be allocated 5 minutes with a total time not to exceed 30 minutes. Is there anyone here in person that would like to address the court this morning? Yes, sir. If you will please stand and state your name. Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am.
My name is Joy
Marcatella.
I'm living at 2 Caverns Branch Development in Oglesby. This is the third time that I've come before this court to participate in the public forum. Item 7 of today's agenda, consider releasing construction bond for phase 1 and 2 Twin Caverns and establish the maintenance bond amount. As one of the 240 landowners, I am requesting that this be delayed until all requirements have been met. This same subject was introduced as item 8 on October 28, 2025 agenda, and was tabled until November 12, 2025. This item was not mentioned or addressed at any time during the November 12th meeting. The day prior to the October 28, 2025 Commissioner Court, I had received an objection letter from a law firm dated October 27 regarding this subject, along with 24 photographs showing improper grading, compaction, and erosion as of October 26, 2025. Today, I have not seen any work done to correct the defects shown in the photos. I believe that these issues must be resolved before prematurely releasing the bonds. The Commissioner's Court, along with the Road and Bridge Department, are responsible for its oversight, guaranteeing that the roads meet or exceed the requirements as noted in the Coryell County subdivision regulations and permitting requirements. The court also needs to consider if releasing or to downgrade these bonds, which are headed as subdivision bonds, does that mean that the developer has completed the development? Will the development still be covered for any outstanding issues? Please consider all these issues before rendering your decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Marcosello. Is there anyone else here in person that would like to address the court this morning? Seeing and hearing none, is there anyone that is participating by Zoom that would like to address the court this morning? Seeing and hearing none, we'll move on to item number 5 on the agenda, which is the consent agenda, noting that there are 5 items listed there. You may consider to approve the consent agenda as presented, or you may choose to select any or all of those to be discussed and considered individually.
I'm going to approve consent agenda A, B, C, D, and E.
We got a motion to approve the consent agenda from Commissioner Taylor and a second from Commissioner Matthews. Any further discussion on item number 5? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Item number 6 on the agenda is the Road and Bridge Report. Mr. Latham.
Let's judge, second part of the month, and meeting with FEMA and meeting with the CDBG MIT. It's been an extent. I've been other than doing work over here. I guess we get down to such.
Number nine.
On grants, is that on?
Yeah. FEMA? Yeah, we've got CDBG MIT on there. And the 4781. Anything for Mr. Latham? All right, very good. Thank you, Mr. Latham. Item number seven on the agenda is to consider releasing the construction bond for phase one and two of Twin Caverns and establish the maintenance bond amount. Mr. Mannix, any updates? We've issued a letter of completion for on the infrastructure for the roadways.
Yes, we did do that. As far as I know, they've met all the criteria to release it from a construction bond to a maintenance bond.
Okay. And I didn't get the formula amount. If approved, what would be the amount for the maintenance bond?
Thank you, sir.
The maintenance bond is to be 20% of the construction bond. That's the $1,443,593.20.
Appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
We'll double check that, huh? That's the two bonds for the
year. Oh, that's together.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Well, given that we've had some pretty lengthy discussions and we have consulted with the attorney, with the county attorney, I am under the belief that we have met the requirements of our own subdivision regulations, that the roads have in fact been inspected and accepted, and a report of completion and acceptance has been issued to the contractor. At this point, I do not see any standing for not releasing the construction bond contingent upon the receipt of a maintenance bond to replace that construction bond.
I'd ask Mr. Mannix to maybe help us a little bit, because there might be some, you know, not some understanding of the construction bond versus the maintenance bond, and what the homeowners or the property owners, I guess, rights and privileges under that maintenance bond.
Our regulations require 20% of the total construction cost be for a maintenance bond for a total of 2 years. At the end of the 2 years, we'll go in and reinspect any issues that may have occurred in that 2 years. Developer will be required to repair them before we would release the maintenance bond.
That maintenance bond will be $1.4
million.
$1,443,593.
Okay. So we did receive another letter from a law firm dated November 24th.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Dated November 24th. Bringing up some different, you know, things, but I'll go back to the original, you know, letter, because I was, you know, stated in a couple of these that, you know, we have driven, inspected, and there are some, I guess, some roadside drainage that I will likely say that every county road or every road in this part of the world has at times, just because of its rock. The water runs very, very fast, and I watched it just the other day. So these, a few of these, you know, drainage issues, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, you know, we've talked about, you know, part of the strategy, and I apologize, my head is plugged, so my brain is not working. It's working about half time, which probably is not even that big. You know, part of the objective, right, is create these drainage areas and then to get grass and in this part of the country, any kind of weeds that we can get to grow in those rocks to, you know, continue to help prevent that erosion on the side of the roads. So in these pictures and in your drive through, are there, you know, any abnormalities that you would see that is not just, you know, part of normal hill country, central Texas, you know, drainage?
Nothing out of the ordinary. Pretty typical this part of the country.
Yeah. I mean, I know we, you know, like I said, spent some pretty and it's always in the typical areas. You know, you start at the top of a pretty severe hill, and the water just goes rushing down the side of the roads. And so under the maintenance bond, what are the parameters? Would some of that drainage come under the maintenance bond, you know, issues? Is that what that's, I mean, I understand if there was, you know, like cracking in the asphalt, maybe a sign that was improperly installed or, you know, something like that. It's part of the drainage, part of a maintenance.
I mean, yeah, so we have in the past addressed drainage issues with the maintenance bond. They, like I said, at the end of the 2 years, we'll go in and we'll look at that stuff. Say, hey, you need to correct this. And they'll typically come in and correct it before we release the bank account. Yeah, any maintenance issue, which erosions, what we would call maintenance issue.
Yeah, cracks, potholing. In the past, typically the maintenance bond was used to accept the roads in the county system.
Right.
This one's actually going into the HOA or DOA. But the construction bonds that y'all are holding for $7 million, that's for construction. Construction work's done. And at that point in time, when construction bond released and reverted to a maintenance bond, which is still a substantial amount of money. Money's been spent, been installed, asphalt's been put down, vegetation's established. Construction's done. Now, erosion, potholes, cracking, shoulders, that's maintenance.
Yeah, and a part of the other, I guess, part of our construction one and a few other things like signage, street signs, which is one of the reasons we, you know, held off on one of them. So all the street signs have been placed. I think mailbox placement, utilities, but maybe a couple, you know, things like that. Correct. But mainly it focuses on the road construction.
Yes.
Do you know if Mr. Belt's going to be here today?
His appearance is going to be intermittent.
Okay.
At best.
Maybe for executive session.
Well, we can't have an executive session without you.
Yeah.
Is really what that boils down to.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you, Judge. You know, I think you know, they have met all the criteria, but I would like to. I have not had a chance since we got this second letter from the lawyer. Just to make sure that there's, you know, nothing in there that we have not met those requirements. I feel confident that they've met all the construction. So I'd like to I would like to table this until after the executive session to discuss this with our county attorney.
Okay. We've got a motion to table until after executive session from Commissioner Weddle and a second from Commissioner Basham. Any further discussion concerning item number 7 at this time? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it. Motion carries. Move that down. Moving on to item number 8, which is to consider construction timeline for Hidden Creek subdivision. Previously, we had had some discussions concerning potential extension on their timeline in accordance with our subdivision regulations, in getting an update from Mr. Mannix and Mr. Latham on where we stand with that.
Actually, Mr. Keith has put this on there. So
yeah,
I let him run with it.
I met with them out there on the 10th. They didn't have a. We had a good conversation out there. I think they know where I stand and how I believe it ought to be run. But anyway, they were pretty close to the subdivision on the 10th. I know I talked to Mr. Mays this morning, and he is, I think, after Thanksgiving, you're supposed to go inspect the first mile.
Yeah.
And not only, I don't see any problem with them getting as far as to the base on the 28th of February. The asphalt is going to be hit or miss because of the weather. But I think if they keep making improvements and stay by these guidelines that they provided us, we should extend it.
Only thing I'd say is that the bond
extension,
yeah,
or provide or letter or whatever from the bond company. I guess what it would be.
Yeah, what's that expression? They don't have six. Summer six, yes.
Yeah. Not they. I'll talk to them while ago. They don't see any problem getting a letter from the bond company.
My understanding of the performance bond is that it cannot be released unless the county releases it. But even still, we'll get the dates updated, provided the bond company will do it.
Yeah, I see why they wouldn't. Yeah, some of them we get don't have an expiration date on them, and some of them have a date
right of
expiration.
This one does have them.
Yes. I understand.
Anything else you want to add to it?
I don't think so.
Given the timeline that you presented to us, a 6-month extension, given that I believe December 6th is the current when that bond expires, is that correct? December 6th?
Yeah. The 2-year window. Later than that.
No.
Or is that the 2-year? The end of it.
So the 6-month extension would be May 6th. Give or take a day or two, of 2026. And I think that very closely aligns.
The junior money goes decent. It'll be May.
Double check me. And that very closely aligns with where they have their proposed asphalt completion date. So if you are not opposed to that, I think an appropriate action for the court would be to issue a 6-month extension until May 6th of 2026 for construction.
Exactly.
Is that your motion?
That's my motion. With the bond extension.
Contingent upon the bond being extended.
So typically there's a process. Takes a little time. Should we have that bond extension for a little longer than the 6 months? Would be my suggestion. That way, it gives time to either convert it to a maintenance bond. Mm-hmm. But that way, we're not up against this,
come back in May.
Right. And then have to extend it again to, close out the job. And then,
what do you think?
Well, I think we, if we're talking about just the bond, because that would be separate than the project.
Yes.
I think we're within our purview, but following our own subdivision regulations, it's a 6 month for the construction timeline.
Not talking about the construction timeline, I'm just referring to the bond.
To the bond.
Because a lot of times, say we're doing our punch list right at the end of the 6 months, we're going back and forth, that takes time, and then put it on the agenda, then coming to court to release the bond or convert them. We need a little bit of grace period there, another 60 days potentially or so.
So the bond extension need to extend out probably 8 months?
Kind of what I was thinking. I mean, looking at the timeline going through the last couple of projects on the punch list since it was during budget season, which
like 2006.
I think that would be good. And if the work gets done quicker than that, then you might be having this conversation in March. But at least then we're not having to go back. And, or if they just put a bond with no date on it.
No expiration date.
Makes sense to me. So the construction timeline would still be May the 8th. And then the bond extension would be July the 8th.
Second. That's your motion.
That is my motion.
Second.
Y'all go with that?
Yes, sir.
Or like you said, get it with an ended date or something.
Yes, perfect.
Okay, so to restate your motion, we have a construction timeline extension until May 8th of 2026 with a bond extension, and that's contingent upon the submission of a bond extension with a minimum time frame of July 8th of 2026.
Yeah.
And Commissioner Matthews, you had the second on that. You're okay. Any further discussion?
This is for the Hidden Creek Phase 1.
Yes, this is for Hidden Creek Phase 1. Any further discussion?
No, sir.
Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Item number 9 is an update and actions on grants to include but not limited to starting with the hazard mitigation plan. I believe we're still in recruitment on that. Submission of some funds to be returned to us. Under the RCP, I have reached out to Ms. Thompson from MRB to try to set a workshop on the afternoon of December 9th. That is our first meeting in December, Commissioner's Court meeting, and so given some other constraints, I was trying just to tie it to that one day. So that would be a separate workshop that hopefully I've given her enough time to work that in her schedule.
You said December?
Ninth. December 9th. The Community Development Block Grant Mitigation Funds, last Thursday. Thursday, we had our quarterly meeting. It was a really good update. I won't, because I don't want to misspeak, but the engineering portion of those four projects is on track. The environmental certificates that are required, they are, I believe they were finalizing those last week, potentially this week. Everything seems to be on track to, again, June, July of next year, of 2026, is when they're proposing to bid these out with construction to begin, hopefully, in the October timeframe of 2026. That's the Bald Knob Road 274,
Shady Lane
and Avenue B in Coppers Cove. It all looks to be going well.
engineering, they're estimating around 50%, 45% done currently. In January, they get 60. So they're going to do the engineering at 60. They'll stop, have some reviews, then they'll move to 90 by June. Maybe a little before that. They'll be at 90% there. Maybe beginning of spring. In summer, they'll be 100%. Then after that, we'll start the process of solicitation, moving forward. We'll be drafting specs probably the rest of the year, doing contract agreements. And then 27, when they're going to break ground. First quarter of 2027?
Yeah, well, yeah, first quarter of 2027 is the October to December timeframe of 26. So that's when I'm understanding that construction will begin.
They actually provided us, if you guys want to look at it, kind of a bird's eye engineering of them.
Survey.
Yeah.
Bird's eye survey.
So they were doing their agent H and their studies. What was it? 274 was estimated at 28,000 cubic feet per second?
Yes.
And 100 year floods?
The flow rates were what he indicated, you know, especially with I think 274 were pretty significant flow rates that I would not have thought would have been there. And so one of the things that we're going to have to come back and you know work through is to what standard are we going to do our construction as far as the floodplain? You've got a 100-year floodplain. You've got a 20-year floodplain. You can do a 10-year floodplain. And all of those factor into, you know, how robust. One of the things Mr. Latham and I talked with them about is TxDOT has recently built a bridge on 274. And it would probably be wise if we matched our hydrology study to the kind of the same standard of what they built there. Because if they built theirs to the 10-year floodplain level and we build one to a 100-year floodplain level, there's going to be a distinct difference in the construction and even to that extent, the construction cost. So we're going to go back and reach out to TxDOT, try to pull some information from them. So that we can kind of keep that whole thoroughfare kind of on the same engineering standard, if that makes sense.
That bridge survived beautifully the last major flooding event that we had. Water probably came up, 2 feet on the guardrail? I mean, it was above, you know, the bridge and up on the guardrail.
Once you start moving out of those, like, 10-year, 50-year to 100-year designs, so, like, if you look at that topography down there, that bottom's so flat, once that channel fills up, it's going to spill out regardless. The only way to get out of that 100-year would be you'd have to elevate that whole roadway and put train pipes down through there. So,
yeah.
We're not going to design a 100-year. I mean, it needs to be about a 10-year. What we suggest, I'm thinking with engineers, just, you know, elevate the bridge and allow it to still run across that slough where it always does.
Yeah.
You know, just get the structure up high enough protected, which after talking with him, that's about a 10-year design. So, that's, I think, what he said TxDOT probably did on that new one down there is a 10-year design.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else you want to add under CDBG MIT? Any?
No, that. I'm glad Baldwin Hog. There was actually an accident on the Baldwin Hog. Somebody ran off of that bridge, so I'm glad this is coming down. All I have.
Any questions under the CDBG MIT? Hearing none, we'll move on to DR 4781. Had some updates, and we got some time extensions that were submitted and approved on a list of about 7 or 8 projects. We've already received about 82-ish thousand in replacement funds, reimbursement funds on that. There were two more reimbursement submissions that I've got that I need to get Mr. Wood's signature on. But it looks like our reimbursement stream is starting to kick in, and we're doing well. Out of our list of projects, I believe there was two that FEMA has requested some additional information on from us on them that would take some engineering support. We have talked with Walker Partners over in Waco, who we do have a professional services agreement with. Given the constraints of what FEMA was asking for, it's not feasible for us to be able to get that engineering piece of things done. So we'll submit for an extension on that. And those are two pretty significant projects, one being...
So the two kind of seek this A&E on is the bridge over 321 of riprap scouring, you know, aprons, and then Charles Mill across them all. I mean, to build these back the way they were on... We don't even know how to do that in Strauss, but I don't know if it's what it is. So, 321, I don't agree with just putting more rock in it because that's created a problem. Or 321, that bridge, I believe, is an 84 model. Textile installed, 84 radiator. It's mid-80s. Textile doesn't build a bridge like that anymore. I mean, they still use that same construction trades, but they have their columns and vents in the flow line. Let's create more erosion. They keep suggesting we put more rock around it. We put so much rock around it, we're starting to choke the river flow down. Now choking the river flow down, we're just moving this scouring and bank sloughing to a different spot. So that's why I wanted some engineering with that, is give us a good fix on this. So not quite sure how to do this version zero with FEMA. It's the first time we've ever done it. My understanding is we have to get a quote from an engineer. I believe it's not seeking procurement, but I have a 20-day window to get a quote from an engineer and be like, well, what's the design estimate to do this? Send that in, they use that for a budget. FEMA views it themselves and either agrees or disagrees with the quote. Once they set that dollar amount, then they'll slate that money for us. We have to go procure an engineer then to start the process. And then they'll reimburse us that. But then once that's done, then you turn around and you sit down and negotiate a project with the engineers. Avenue we haven't done, so it's learning. But we don't know how to fix Charles Mill. We're hoping it just go in this rain, but I hope that every time. So.
Yeah, I drove it the other day. It's, yeah.
I mean, there's riverbank sloughs on it. It's undermined. I don't know, it's been there since the 50s. Six generations of recapping it probably, so. Yeah.
But the takeaway from this is we're making progress. It is slow, and there's a learning curve that goes along with some of the bigger projects that we're looking into. But the work that's been completed, I think we've got all the closeout documents on those. It's just the two to three that we have that are open, that are pending some RFIs. So we should see as FEMA processes and approve those. We should see funding reimbursement forms come in, get those signed, submitted, and a stream coming back in.
Thank you. Desiree's been sick by days out. I think there's about 400,000 or 300 that's just pending a few things, and Tatum has that money fixing to come to us, Judge. Is that?
Yes.
And then
I think the figure's a little bit higher than that, but.
Well, but I think that's what they physically have funds, but there's more in queue unless it's moved.
Yes.
Looked at the formula lately. This is where I might get a numbers crossed, but I believe there's about $1.6 million Desiree's got submitted in. That's not going to get rid of. Don't think there's going to be much of it projected.
Yeah.
And that's just a lot of that's just reimbursement.
Yes.
And then that doesn't even include the two projects we're talking about and about 10 other ones, but we're going to just build them back as it was. That's what I just have to scope out with that.
Yeah.
It's finally looking promising.
That's good news.
Yeah.
13 PDMGs that Ray had to count another day.
So. Yeah.
It's been a challenge. You know, I appreciate really a lot of this has been on Desiree's shoulders, and she's carried this through. And her level of frustration in having to deal with 13 is pretty significant. So if you see her, I would encourage you to give her a warm thank you for what she's doing. Anything else to cover on 4781? Any questions concerning DR 4781? Okay, we'll move on to the Leon Cowhouse flood project. I don't have any updates, but Mr. Manning is here. If you'd like to give us an update on flood gauges or any of the drainage study.
Sure, Joe. So 8 of the 9 ACF extensions and 9 plants and getting the data back into the platform. Those, the 9th one, we were going to put it, we need to put one of the paper off, and we were trying to work out some of the Fort Hood. That turned out to be the last working of the team. So we're actually going to put the 9th gauge on the paper off there. It was the team back on the west side. Found a spot. We'll probably have it in this week. We got those sensors where they're synchronized. We'll probably have the data coming over the maps within the next couple of weeks. This last couple of rainfall events, we actually picked up some flow, so they're all working. Still haven't had cameras, so once we get them up, we'll actually be able to see 5 feet on at least 3 of them. The 8M gauges, but those are more substantial devices. And that's going through A&M. That's got to go through a bid process. Those gauges are going to the main stem of the Leon and Cowhouse. They'll probably be in. They'll probably be actually working on sometime in the spring, hopefully before we get into the flood season. The model, they've got they're starting to give us some outputs out of the model. They're giving us certain watersheds as samples. And so we're going to start playing around with pushing those along down the platform, and we'll certainly keep Buffalo County up to speed on that. We won't put them on the public platform yet, but the ones that the county gets to see, we'll use some of those test runs and maybe pull in the folks from the Sheriff's Office, Road and Bridge, and other departments and see how that works. As I said, the last time we talked about this, we've got 4 crossings. We're going to help fund 4 crossings. And I've been working with Road and Bridge. I think it's where he wants to go. We're going to split the cost 50-50. So we'll have 4 additional water crossings, I think, that we're going to put in, but starting sometime this next year. And we had certain criteria they had to meet with the model, but there were plenty to pick from. And then we let Justin kind of work through where those are going. But we'll start, I assume we'll start construction on those sometime in the late winter, early spring, Justin.
Yeah. I was thinking maybe after January we look at it. My current contract with Yoder ends in February, so I'd like to get him a PO issued before then so we can hold our cross for the grant. So.
And we need to sit down with the county attorney and kind of paper up how we're going to flow money from ACF over to help pay for the. This is not Blackman money, this is ACF money, but ACF bounced the funds to kick in. So we're going to try to start a program where we can do 4 a year that would help a little. That's all I got.
That's all you got is lots of good. So we appreciate it. Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Manning on the Leon River Cowhouse projects?
I have none.
Very good. Again, thank you, Mr. Manning. Appreciate it. Are there any other grants that the court wishes to discuss or any actions that the court wishes to take under item number 9? Hearing none, we'll move on to item number 10, which is to consider a contract with Goldsmith Solutions for managed IT services. Since our last meeting, Mr. Belt, I believe, has been engaged with Goldsmith Solutions, their legal team as well, on some wording, some changes to some wording, even as late as yesterday afternoon. Ms. Roebuck handed you a clean version of the last iteration that I believe that they have come to an agreement on. Changes a little bit of the wording, primarily in section 1, to get it cleaned up on who is notifying whom when you know, renewals or terminations or forthcoming. There was that is all part of item number 1. Within paragraph number 1 other paragraph 15C, the wording that Mr. Belt had originally discussed with the court, the funding after the first year of this contract is subject to review to revenue availability and appropriation of funds in the annual budget approved by the Coryell County Commissioners Court. Any purchases contingent upon the continued availability of appropriations and is subject to cancellation without penalty, either in whole or in part, if the funds are not appropriated by the Coryell County Commissioners Court or otherwise made available. That was the budgeting piece of the contract that he had asked to put in there, and it has been incorporated into the clean version which you were provided. And I believe those are the highlights. So subject to any of your questions or discussions, I know we've spent several weeks in trying to get this resolved, but I believe we are at a point where Mr. Belt concurs with the wording from Goldsmith Solutions.
When did we actually receive this? Today? Or last night at 11?
Last night, but today we got the clean version of it.
Good. We know McBride has had time to go over this.
The last, I can't tell you that I know that. But the last email traffic indicated that he concurred with what was being, and that was this morning. I believe it's 7 something.
Sir, I think that's accurate. I would just say that we didn't make any changes. We just accepted what we had proposed to him, which had what he had proposed to us, and then that's what's printed in front of you. And there was an email from Mr. Belt saying that he agreed to the change that we made after he made changes on the auditorium.
The meeting I had with him, it looks like everything was covered. I met with Mr. Belt for maybe an hour, I think, on Thursday last week.
Judge, I would point out that number 20 did not change, but that just talks about additional surety and being committed to provide that to the county upon execution of the agreement. That was one of the requirements. And the other thing, and then I'd also point out number 7, we had talked about at a previous meeting about the county needs to name at least 2 points of contact for the county.
If the court so chooses, I would recommend for the points of contact being the office of the county judge and the county attorney.
What I have written in mind on the blank line.
That will certainly those in there, but it would be my recommendation to the court to approve the contract with Goldsmith Solutions for managed IT services.
Make motion to approve the contract with Goldsmith Solutions for IT services.
Got a motion to approve the contract from Commissioner Matthews.
Hold my second for a minute until Basham gets back in here, because I'd love for him to participate in this vote. I would imagine he's probably calling his attorney right now.
Commissioner Basham, we've on item number 10, we have had a motion to approve the contract with Goldsmith Solutions and identifying in paragraph number 7 that the point of contact be established as the office of the county judge as well as the office of the county attorney. There has been no second to that motion at this point.
I will second that motion, Judge.
There is a second from Commissioner Weddle.
I will not. Like I said, we just got this. And I know I've been sick, been out of pocket, but that's on me, not on this court. But I hadn't had time to go over this. And I'd like to, but I mean, I know this has been going on, but I mean, pretty big decision for the county, in my opinion. I'd like to visit with county attorney, but it's just my opinion on it.
Any further discussion from the court? Okay, do we have a motion and a second on the floor? So all of those in favor of approving the contract with Goldsmith Solutions for Managed IT Services, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
By a vote of 3-1, that motion passes. Moving on to item number 11, to consider the interlocal cooperative contract with the University of Texas at Austin for Regional Security Operations Center services. If you'll note that, I believe a copy of that did go out in your packet. This is what we refer to in some of the interviews as the RSOC. This is by the last billing that I had pulled. This saves us about just a little under $1,500 a month based off what we're currently contracted at, a significant savings. So with that, Goldsmith Solutions would be the primary point of contact for the state to contact them as they move forward. But there are county representatives designated within the interlocal agreement. I can't quote the exact email traffic, but I believe Mr. Belt has been included in that with communications with Goldsmith and Goldsmith's counsel. And this appears to be the standard contract that I looked up from coming out of University of Texas.
Yes, sir, Judge. I just add, we met with Mr. Belt on Thursday afternoon, and he indicated that all was by standard language that he was comfortable with. This is an agreement between Coryell County and the University of Texas at Austin, which is the agent for your area for the state of Texas. We're just acting on your behalf in that capacity. And I would add that Steve Wolver from our team that heads this up, he's on Zoom. So if you have any questions or hear anything from him, I'd be happy to. I'm sure he'd be happy to answer those questions.
I'm under a grant that we'll be receiving that would.
That's a great question. So basically, the state of Texas started this in the previous legislative cycle, which is 2023, as a pilot program where they did it on a small basis. Now they've extended it statewide, and they've said that they're going to cover the cost of this moving forward. Now,
every year, or is that every 2 years?
So it's on a 2 year basis, based on legislative session, but you know how that is as a commissioner, that they hook you and then they say, oh, by the way,
we're doing a lot of this.
But I believe, take them of their word, or not so much taking the word, but I think they're acting in good faith of trying to solve this problem, because it exists for every school district, every water district, every county, every state agency, and the problem of cybersecurity. And they know that they interact with all these players, so the state can allocate as much money as they want for their agencies. What if they get emails from Coryell County or some school district that compromises them? They're in the same boat you are. So they've committed to fund it moving forward for this 2 year session. And then we'll see what the next legislative cycle looks like. But they're just now really ramping this up. And I believe the main center for Texas is in San Antonio. Like, they've got regional centers to deal with regional players, so that's not just a top-down system. And then they've got someone observing them, and they're bringing in big guns like military and people like that are helping drive this program. So we'll continue to pay attention to it during the legislative cycle and bring any changes that we see. But I would defer to Steve to see if he has anything to add to that.
Yeah, just would add, there's over 3,100 entities that these RSOCs are looking to cover throughout the state, including counties, school districts, you know, public utilities, et cetera. So, and this is in response to a large cybersecurity event that happened in 2019, where there was a large event across the state that had pretty significant impact.
If I recall that correctly, it was in August of 2019, and it mainly affected municipalities, but the malicious folks had already been in these infrastructures for months, and then they waited until a Saturday and then executed. Meaning that they got in as many places as they could get in, but it doesn't make sense to attack one and then attack the second one, because the second one's going to know the first one happened and start getting defensive. They waited until they were in as many as they thought they could get in, and then executed it. So I think this, to Steve's point, is kind of the state trying to step up and help the local players address cybersecurity, which Coryell County was addressing well before. This is just another tool in the tool chest, so to speak. And it's someone sitting in a room 24/7 looking at it at the state level. And then they have a vendor as well that's a private industry company that's CrowdStrike, which is quite large and integrated into industry, meaning like massive corporations and state infrastructure.
Do we know?
And what was the name of the profile? Sorry.
Well, my question, what would be like, we know kind of the rough ballpark, but maybe the savings would be for the county?
Yes, sir. I think that's what the judge is speaking to, is currently on your bill with your current provider, it's about $1,400 to $1,500 a month that you're paying for this piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got all these different licenses and all these things, but if you compare apples to apples, meaning taking what you're currently paying for out and then using this instead, it's about a $1,400 to $1,500 a month savings. Yes, sir. And so even if the cost comes back, right, even if the state comes back at a, hey, you have to match it at 50% of whatever, it's still going to be a net savings to the county. And I think also, you know, being a check and a balance to the system. I mean, it's not just relying on us or just relying on our vendor. It's, you know, we're involved, you're involved. The vendor, which is CrowdStrike now, is involved. The state of Texas is involved. Their cybersecurity command is involved. But yet we're going to have local access to where we're not just hoping that they're minding the store, so to speak. I mean, like, it's all the above type strategy, like partnership.
And beyond the software licensing savings, the UT RSOC has over 30 people that they work 24/7/365 as well.
Right. RSOC is Regional Security Operations Center.
So you'll see, I make the joke that, you know, SOC's where most people come from with the 2/3 of their feet, but Security Operations Center, you'll hear that term SOC, you'll hear NOC, Network Operations Center, which is the network side of it, like is your internet up or down? We handle that, though. We'll be handling that for Oriel County and have a monitoring system for that. That's more just a making sure you can do business. This is making sure your business is secure and there's multiple eyes on it at all times.
So was the product we were using, was that the Azure or was that, which one was it?
No, sir. I believe it was Sentinel One.
Sentinel One.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah. And the state does require you to use their product, yeah, which is CrowdStrike. But if you go Google CrowdStrike, the first result that will pop up is the patch update issue they had back in August of last year, which crashed most airports in the United States. Like it turned on the screens where you see, like, where do I go to my flight, to a little frowny face. They have addressed that. It was not a security breach at all. It was they pushed out an update that broke something in Microsoft Windows. And we've talked to them about that. But the state of Texas was already with CrowdStrike and has continued to move forward with them because they are an industry leader when it comes to cyber security. And they're based here in Texas also. They're all over the United States, but they have a major presence here in Texas.
Although historically I wouldn't have anything to do with the University of Texas, I would make a motion to enter into this agreement, this contract with the University of Texas, or SOC, regional SOC services.
Second.
Yeah. I will acknowledge the motion and the second. I am slightly disappointed y'all did not defer to the IT guru and University of Texas fan from Precinct 3 to chime in on this one. But I'll
you know what, well, I mean, I think it's a good path on that. You know, have some savings. You know me, I'm all for saving.
Worst case scenario, like you said, 50% or it goes away.
We just have to kind of put you on the spot. It is, and I know you don't, we use this quote. Quite often in this court, you don't have a crystal ball, but
right, yes.
You use that quite often, not the court.
Do you foresee this going away? I mean,
well, I'll tell you this, Commissioner. The only thing I have to compare it to is another technology system the state rolled out years ago that was a lot called live scans, where you put your fingerprints in, where the sheriff's office can identify someone if they want to identify themselves. And the state said, oh, we're going to fund this for 2 to 4 years, and then it's on the county. And so we have counties that budget for it every year, budget for every year, budget for every year. The state's still paying for that. And they, because it solved a problem for the state of Texas, and they realized, like, do we want to go have a pound of paying for a little bit of money by getting money out of every local entity, or do we want to solve the problem and it not make a huge impact? So I can't speak to what they'll do. Obviously, you know, those fine people, they change their mind every day sometimes down there.
Yes.
But that's a polite way of putting it. But it makes a lot of sense to me that we're all in this boat together of serving citizens, and these networks are getting more and more tied together, where your tax office deals with Austin and it's on the computer that the county touches the county system, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
It's like, I always tell people, you can't be kind of secure. You're either secure or you're not secure. So if it solves that problem, I think they'll continue to fund it. I don't know how much money they're putting towards it, but every time I look, the state has billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars in surplus. And according to one politician, he just got us $11 billion refund for the border project, which I don't know if it's true. I just saw that on the news last night. But maybe the state was funding the border and the feds are going to give us our money back. But that's the side. I promise not to change your desktops burnt orange, although I'm
not allowed
to. But I will tell you the reason it's the University of Texas is it's a regional thing. So we have counties that are with Angelo State University, which is in San Angelo.
Yeah.
And we asked, could we put all of our counties with just one of the RSOCs, just so we're having to interface to one? And they said, no, it's a regional thing. So we have people, counties that we serve that will be out of UT Austin. When we have counties that we serve that will be West Texas and probably some that will I don't know if Texas is participating yet, but something up in that Panhandle region as well.
And we have Dorkbot for free. I don't know, Dorkbot.
Yes.
Web apps that have security assessments.
And I would just say this with continuing funding, the fact that the state is working with the University of Texas, San Angelo State, and these universities, which already have security operations centers and training programs, they're doing a pretty good job of making that cost effective for the state as well. So hopefully that you can never tell what the legislature is going to do, but hopefully they've set it up where it's easy to keep funding.
And UT Austin has this for their operations. I mean, think about, you know, UT Southwestern Medical Center, you know, the UT system of all the different colleges, A&M has the same system. You know, they already have this, and the state funds them. So it's just kind of adding another piece to the funds, so to speak. So
thank you.
Sam, thank you. Steve, thank you for the input on that as well. So we have a motion to approve the interlocal cooperative contract from Commissioner Matthews and a second from Commissioner Weddle. The final call, any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Item number 12, which is a discussion and update on the transition of IT services. We did have a teleconference meeting with our IT transition team a little over a week ago on the was that the 12th, 13th?
17th. We've continued to do interviews with department heads. We were working on that on site the November 13th and 14th. As the judge mentioned, the committee met on Monday the 17th. Yesterday, whatever that day was, November 24th, we met with the vendor for the tax office and discussed that transition, and that's moved along. And they were very cooperative and helpful in that. Today, we've got additional people on site, continuing site surveys. I think if we could visit with the Jack Ridge Judge, then we want to go down to Copper's Cove and those three facilities. And then our next transition meeting is 9:30 on December 5th, which is the week from Friday after the holiday. Everyone's been super helpful, and we're appreciative of that. I did get to have a really in-depth, longer than I expected, conversation with your 52nd district judge, which was very helpful, and just to talk through some of the challenges of that historic courtroom, which we're very familiar with. And so he and his team have been giving us some insight, and there's a security committee the 52nd district judge is in charge of. We've asked to be a part of that, and they're not on their next meeting. I think they meet quarterly. Not on their next meeting, because that's kind of down the weeds of what we're talking about. We're still looking at the broad view, but we visit with his staff with them starting to participate in that, because often security and technology line up. You've got to have the technology to make sure that your team of bailiffs and sheriff's office folks can communicate. So we've already raised a couple of things there that were on their radar, and we're working towards resolutions and improvements when it comes to that. They have the answer to the question, you know.
Okay, sir.
Thank you for your time.
Mr. Weld, do you have anything to add to?
No, I've just, now I think we can, now we have a contract, we can really start doing some things, so I appreciate it.
Okay, very good.
Where will that meeting be? Did you?
We've been doing
video. Zoom. We have Zoom.
Yeah, I didn't notice. You didn't get the last. Okay. You didn't get the last.
That was my.
I was thinking about that later. I was like, I like Justin to miss one of these meetings.
That was my error.
Okay.
I had it in my calendar, but I put it in there when we were talking about it.
Yeah, if you know, for that type of meeting, Zoom worked.
Right.
It was great.
It was pretty short. It was 30 minute kind of update versus what we all met in person to take us on.
Okay. Moving on to item number 13, which is to consider the certificate of resolution 2026 for the Section 125 premium only plan. This resolution is tied to our employee benefits. And I can never remember from one year to the next. So, Sherry, if you'd like to update us and educate us on what we're about to consider.
Divided basically states election participate or not, and it pertains to the health insurance that the county provides, which is health, dental, and vision. And it simply states that we are withholding the premiums pre-tax versus post-tax, which saves the employee money and the county money. So that's all it is. You just sign and then return it to Randy or myself. But it's something we do every year.
That is, and does that same explanation also does that carry over as well to item number 14, which is the adoption agreement? So one is a certificate of resolution, and one is an adoption agreement. So if there's no objection from the court, I would recommend that we consider both of those together, because I think if we're going to do one, we probably should do the other. So I would entertain a motion to approve items number 13 and 14. So moved. Motion to approve from Commissioner Basham.
Second.
Second from Commissioner Taylor. Any further discussion on either item number 13 or 14 concerning the Section 125 premium only plan? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. Ayes have it. Motion carries. Item number 15 on the agenda is to consider court order CC 25-11, which is an order declaring equipment property as surplus salvage. Noted there is a 2016 Ford Explorer. That is the former vehicle for Constable of Precinct 4. And I believe they'd done, he had received a vehicle from the Sheriff's Department as a passed down model. After taking a look at this one and seeing what kind of, you know, physical shape it was in, and thought it was probably more prudent for us to liquidate this as they move some vehicles down.
I make a motion to approve CC 25-11.
We got a motion to approve from Commissioner Matthews, a second from Commissioner Basham. Any further discussion on item number 15? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. I just have it. Motion carries.
But unit, is it the road?
I think no, sir. It says the officer had it right now. We're going to move it over to the sheriff's office. They will be commissioned. They'll be headed your way, sir.
Okay. We were going to put the equipment we salvaged in January, just because we put them in this time of year, everybody using their vacation time up, picking up.
That'll work, because there's some other peripherals that we need to dispose of as well. I mean,
we planned on first part of January, having Purple Wave come out and inventory all
that. Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you. Item number 16 is discuss and consider closure of county offices for Christmas Eve. I think this is one that Commissioner Matthews had on the agenda and open for discussion.
I got contacted by several departments in the courthouse for Christmas Eve, and I know we had discussion about it during the calendar. But it would be my recommendation that we close the courthouse on Christmas Eve.
That motion?
Yes, sir.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion.
County offices, excuse me.
Yeah, county offices.
County offices on Christmas Eve, sorry.
There's a motion to close county offices for the entire day.
Yes, sir.
From Commissioner Matthews, and second from Commissioner Taylor. as far as a discussion point, we were trying to keep, or at least I was trying to keep some consistency, because usually those days before holidays are less active. And so I'd spoken with the tax office, county clerk's office, a couple of the courts, and they all seemed to be in agreement that if we would work half a day on both November 26th as well as December 24th, and I could put that into one combined order so that they would still be working the morning time of those days, because they are, in fact, getting, you know, the regular scheduled holidays. So I would ask that the court consider that well, as part of this motion in action. All right, so hearing no revision motion, the motion that stands is to close the county offices on Christmas Eve, December 24th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Item number 17 is discussion of dispatcher holiday pay.
Yes, I asked for that bill on the agenda as well. It's a little confusing in the budget. And it always has been.
Yep.
Nothing to do with the, it's just how the system is set up. But anyways, because the dispatchers do fall under the sheriff's office, you know, there's some holiday pay in there, or some overtime pay. It's a little confusing. I just think we need to clarify it to the dispatchers. My understanding, it is not budgeted in there, but I think we just need to clarify it for the future, because it was relayed back to them, to the sheriff's office, that they were getting paid for that. Now, a lot of misunderstanding here, there, and other, but we just need to make sure that somehow we break it out. I don't know how you would. Maybe that new system does it. I don't know. But thank you.
So for clarity, though, there was an additional $15,000 in the overtime pay under the sheriff's office. And it was my belief and understanding that that's part of what that additional increase was intended to do. We may not have put it directly under the correct or most appropriate, I won't say correct, most appropriate budget line item, but those funds are available at the sheriff's discretion to pay for dispatch within his budget.
Great.
We can.
Yeah, that was my understanding too. That's what I thought when we put that in there, was at the sheriff's discretion of who he.
That I think those funds are available to him.
Okay.
Although I'm looking at the, what line item is that on? It used to say overtime.
One says overtime, and then I think another one says holiday pay.
Yeah, that's what I remembered. I can find it here.
Yes, one is comp and overtime, and then one is holiday pay.
What page?
8 of 16.
There we go. I was right there.
Well, holiday pay carried over here.
Oh, okay.
For officers back. Then it drops down right here. Is that it? Sorry.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Judge, if I may?
Yes. Yes.
So just to clarify some things, I've been told as far as holiday pay goes, this is for the Sheriff's Department, not for every other department. We've been told several different things. One is that we're already making holiday pay that's carried into your salary, and you get that no matter what. You don't get any extra pay when that holiday passes. You can take it off, you take it off. You're already getting paid for that. It's included in those salaries on those employees on the other salary. The hours that we're going to discuss here in a little bit. But there's some confusion with the dispatcher. And I'll tell you what the confusion is. And I've seen it come from this court. And that is that, where are they? Are they public safety officials? Are they not public safety officials? Do they fall under a certain rule? Do they not fall under that rule? And the reason for that, I say it's confusing, is because they work 12-hour shifts. Well, if they don't fall under the public safety aspect of it, then they get paid anything over 40 is overtime or comp time, right? Because that's a rule they fall under FLSA. If we put them in the public safety realm, then we run that, what is it, 207K exemption that you're going to be talking about, right? And then that holiday pay would make sense if it was already paid because of their hours that they're going to be doing. That makes sense? It's just confusing for the girls because they don't see it on their paychecks after a holiday. My people, I know that they're paid every month a little bit, so much for all of the holidays, is what Ms. McFarland has explained to me. It's already being paid to them throughout the year for all of the holidays, a little bit at a time. So I think that's where some of the confusion is coming in from.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, Captain Clinton, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I want to make sure I very clearly understand what you've communicated. That right now you're under the belief that within the dispatch office, those emergency communicators that we have, they are all receiving a small portion of holiday pay paid out throughout the year.
So okay. Everybody else at the Sheriff's Department is, but the dispatchers were told that they don't get that because they don't fall under the public safety realm.
Okay. All right. That's what I wanted to, that's what I wanted to make sure I was clear on. Okay.
They're the only ones that get paid for the holiday.
They don't get any holiday pay. We just got them this year. Y'all approved for their overtime or comp time to be able to reimburse them for that. The hours they work. I guess my whole statement, Judge, was the fact that it's confusing when I understand we're talking about holiday pay, but it's bigger than that, I think. When we talk about the dispatchers in particular, we need to make a decision, or the court needs to make a decision. Are they going to be included in public safety realm? And they draw that beach however we pay everybody else? Or are they going to be a 40-hour employee, right? Because they got to be in one of those categories. They can't be in one or the other when it fits our needs.
I can add one thing to that.
Yeah.
Dispatchers have to meet the same requirements as the jailers and the deputies too. They have to be licensed. They have to have mandated training. So they meet the same qualifications as deputies and jailers do, but they're the ones that are not included in all that.
I'm not going to try to sit here and quote the federal
207K.
207K policy off the top of my head, because as soon as I say that, I'm going to put myself in a bad situation. I believe that previously the court, in compliance with that, adopted deputies, anybody falling under a deputy title, and jailers. I will say and I'll go out on a limb and say this, I think dispatchers are not eligible under the 207K. But that's the part that we need to get resolution on, whether they're going to be included in that or not. But at this point, the last in-depth discussions we'd had and the last review of that we'd had, I do not believe that dispatchers are eligible. But I'm not saying that that is a fact. I'm saying that's the last that we put together. And we do have it as a discussion item for today, and some other amendments that we've done to some wording so that we will have a more formalized explanation of the 207K, of what this court is going to adopt and how to implement it going forward.
So I have a question. With that being said, is there a reason why they cannot get their holiday pay instead of accumulating it like they have been? I mean, they accumulate those hours, and y'all, as well as I do, know those hours build up when they can't take off. And it would be better financially for us to pay them their holiday instead of letting the time keep building up that's never been, they can't use. And it's also another incentive for them to want to continue to work, because I mean, it is an incentive pay for them. To an extent. But like I said, right now, we've got several dispatchers with over 150, 200 hours in holiday time. They can't take, because we don't have the manpower for them to take off when they want to.
No, and I understand that. One of the things that leads into the question, and just as a discussion, is I was not aware that we paid this out routinely to everyone throughout the year.
That's how 207K works. I mean, that's just how the law enforcement side operates.
That I would think that it's, I don't mind discussing this, you know, openly. I was more under the impression that for those individuals that were working that holiday, they would receive pay for that holiday, because we'll have individuals that are not working that day. And it sounds like all of everyone, whether they work on a holiday or not, are getting a little bit extra for holiday pay. But the dispatchers are not. I'm not saying that the dispatchers, I'm just saying the ones that we grouped
follow
in there.
The 207K.
Which then, you know, I think that needs to be another discussion the court needs to have about, you know, holiday pay, because certainly those that are working deserve holiday pay. But if you're not scheduled to work and you don't work, I'm not sure that we pay holiday pay for that. Is that, am I understanding?
I didn't follow you. I don't get it.
And what he's saying is some of the ones that are getting the holiday pay, they may not actually be working that holiday, but they're still getting a little piece of it. But the way that 207, the way I understand it, is that it pays holiday pay throughout the year. So you may not work Thanksgiving, but you're going to work Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. Because it works on a 28-day cycle. You're going to hit some of it.
Depending on how they're scheduled. They may be off. They just may, Christmas, they may just be scheduled off normally, not knowing that it's Christmas. But Thanksgiving, they may work Thanksgiving.
I think another portion of that, too, is that, you know, we're talking about people who are working 12-hour shifts. We pay 8 hours worth of holiday pay. So there's 4 hours that they're not making holiday pay, which is the way I understood that, is why that we do that, is that covered part of that 4 hours on some of them, even though maybe the other one didn't work it, but the other one worked the other holiday. Is the way I'm understanding.
And that's kind of the way I understood it. It kind of levels yeah. out over the, throughout the yeah. year. But more than likely, you're going to hit one or two holidays to have to work.
The other would be a tracking nightmare to try to.
Yeah.
Please just issue that January 1, 13 days holiday pay to dispatch.
I think we'll get into this. I mean, the 207K is pretty clear. I mean, there are, and it's not, Correll doesn't make that decision. Either you make the decision to be under 207K or not. Once you make that decision of 207K, then I think you have to follow the rules of 207K that are, you know, set out.
But I think that discussion is for later, though.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, it's kind of...
Don't follow up.
Exactly.
You must all adopt to pay the dispatchers.
Yes. Well, I, for one, think we definitely got to figure out a way to compensate an employee that works on a holiday. And that's part of the dispatchers. I thought we had. I mean, that's my confusion. I thought that's why we put in there holiday pay was for the sheriff to say, okay, we have a dispatcher working on a holiday, they're going to get, and then they submit that to payroll, and payroll processes it, and they get paid that extra money for that particular holiday. I mean, that's the way I thought when we discuss this in the beginning, but there might be a disconnect that we've got to circle back around and make sure that everybody, that the sheriff's department understands they have to submit that paperwork.
We were told that the girls were not going to get paid holiday.
Right.
That's what we were told.
I think the disconnect is this year we got approval mm-hmm. to pay them overtime, okay, where they weren't making overtime in fast. Now, with the holiday thing coming up, they weren't getting that either. I guess we didn't address the holiday pay along when we addressed the overtime.
I did address the holiday.
What is that? The same compensation that everyone else is on par with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I've certainly got some notes and some questions.
Yeah. Comp and overtime, 15,000, and we raised holiday 8,000. Yeah, I think it's there. It's just a matter of probably getting the proper paperwork flow going.
Okay. Is there anything else we need to cover at this time under item number 17?
Okay.
All right. Item number 18 is to consider a personal reimbursement form submitted by a constable of Precinct 1 and with the court's indulgence, I think we can take 18 and 19 at the same time. After pay bills from our last meeting, went back and was presented some more detailed information concerning one of the reimbursement forms that we had approved. And one of the concerns that has come up, at least in my mind, we do not have a clear and concise policy on the utilization of a reimbursement form. We have as many and as widely varying now. I believe our Walmart card, Walmart shut down our Walmart purchase account. But we do have commercial credit cards that are available to department heads and elected officials to purchase items. So one of the things that starts getting into question is, if I purchase something, I get reimbursed for it, and then I return that purchase. So that's one to address under the reimbursement forms. And then number two is, I think we are at a point where, and this leads into item number 20 a little bit, but I'm not, I think we're at a point where we need to start more closely defining what the parameters are for budget line items. And this is not directed at anyone in particular, but clothing for elected officials is clothing for those elected officials. I mean, I don't ask our citizens to pay for any of my clothing items. Within the sheriff's department, there's a line item for uniforms because they wear a standardized uniform that is prescribed by the sheriff. Within Road and Bridge, there's a uniform line item because they wear a uniform that is prescribed by the Road and Bridge administrator. I do not know that you can have a uniform for one, because it's whatever you wear that day is your uniform. And that's how I will as clearly and concisely state my concerns over those two reimbursement forms that have been submitted.
I'd break them out. I would run them together. I do understand the uniform side, but I don't understand the shoe wear that was purchased. The only job that I know truly that gives you a pair of shoes is probably the Army, even as a highway patrol. I had to buy my own boots. Or, you know, either that or go barefoot, but, you know, you didn't have to have, you know, boots. So,
yeah, that was a good pass. That's part of the sheriff's office.
Yeah.
They don't supply boots or shoes to patrol deputies, I don't believe.
So,
yeah, I think shoes, hats, now as far as shirts and pants.
Yeah.
You know, some counties, you know, that have larger constable departments, they have a standardized uniform they're required to wear every day.
Am I right? We don't have that, correct?
No.
No, we don't. We don't have.
No, he would have to create his own, as a, what is uniform?
Yeah, I don't know how that works in larger counties. Some of the larger counties, I mean, the constable's office is as big as the sheriff's office, and I think they do have a head, honcho, over that. Okay.
Yeah, they create their own uniform policy.
Yeah.
But
we don't provide shoes. We provide uniforms and coats. You have just coats.
Y'all mandate steel toe boots?
No, there has been some instances where I've partially bought a couple pair of boots, the old drivers, they run them. Bought their boots back. You see some, some of them, where they mandate leather and steel toe, that they give them a voucher. So allowing them to go buy one, and that voucher is X amount of dollars, and you can go to Red Wing or a store.
Yeah.
Or
go to Razzle's.
They mandated, they brought the mandate in after, and you can either buy them yourself and they'd reimburse you a little, or they would furnish you a pair.
Yeah, they would set a cap at that.
$50 Back then, I think it was like $90 or something. Well, yeah, a long time ago.
And for so many months, too, it'd be either if you get $90 or they're 18 months or something.
And if you didn't buy any, they furnished you with TGC glued together. Yes.
They're like bowling shoes, you got
No.
No,
TDC inmate shoes.
Yeah.
But I stepped off the asphalt, laid down the machine, and took another step, and my sock was on the ground because the glue got so hot and it released. But I think it on my footwear, if you're not specifically saying that this is, say, take road and bridge, for instance, you will have leather and steel toes. Unless you specifically state that, and then you have to kind of give a voucher, reimbursement, well, whatever you want to call it. But if it's not, then they can wear whatever.
We talked about that out there before. That guy show up in dunes or penny shoes. But we've never put that in because we're not presents this.
Right? That's a real, you're mandating that that's part of the uniform, so yeah. you have to supply them.
That's the wonderful thing about you. You can write a policy for your department when you're a department of one. Then I guess it will be up to the court to write a policy for departments of one that would define what is expendable under the uniform section. And that was actually working with that.
What if you don't have a uniform section?
Well, that's what I'm, yeah,
that
right.
Is, that's the other piece of the equation.
Right. They have
more miscellaneous.
Yeah, they have miscellaneous. That's where they
know they don't.
Not even.
Yep, each and the other. Law enforcement supplies would be the category then.
That looks like bullets.
Well, shields.
Disposable vests, field, camera, stuff like that. That's what I consider.
So that begs the question is, what is law enforcement supplies, and is clothing considered law enforcement supplies? I think the comparative analysis becomes, if we look at our largest law enforcement agency, it is broken down into different line items within the budget.
Agreed.
So would that be the court's guidance on response and looking through, is that if we have a precedence in another department that appears similar or very close to, would that be the same guidance that we would look to uphold?
Yeah, because we're going to do one for them, we do for all. You know, if we're going to buy shoes for one person, then I guess we can buy shoes for everybody.
Clerks.
Yeah,
Mr.
Sure.
Well,
I got you.
It must be
sensitive.
Yeah.
For my department, my concern would be anything reimbursable like that. If you reimburse it, that's paid for by these employees, say, credit card cash. They have to proceed. Let's just say they don't turn around and get a reimbursement for that and take that
right
back to Walmart and get their money back and still wear their tennis shoes or. That's why how we when we control it under our uniform line item, it's county purchased or issued inventory
and returned. Hopefully.
Returned or like if they're wore out,
right?
You know,
but if somebody's on for 6 months and they depart our lovely county, then they should return all those uniforms back into the pool.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Agreed. Not the sheriff's office same way. They don't, hopefully they don't take their uniforms home with them.
You know, some, we have done a few of them through
you know, just purchase, but leave most of the time. Well, we certainly do lose. We got some that are a little different than our normal uniform provided. I don't believe that. I wouldn't want the employee having to buy them and then we'd be first for us for all of them.
Okay.
Then you get into the issue too of reimbursement. It's not all through the county. The county doesn't reimburse tax. You go buy $100, $200 pair of boots, the employee pays tax on that. This is where we purchase it. There are normal vendors. The employee goes and buys something, they get reimbursed. That's why I'm discouraged. Once my guys is, I don't know, if you submit a reimbursement, just let me know. We'll figure out a way to purchase something. Because there's been instances we bought parts and stuff online. We didn't have means of buying it before we had Amazon account credit card. I can't reimburse them on tax, so.
You brought up policy, I would certainly look at it.
Yeah, I think it's something that I agree with the commissioner. I think it's something that's been brought to our attention. We need to start looking at it and coming up with what that policy will be.
All right, so under both 18 and 19, I wasn't really looking for any action from the court. It was more just wanting you to make you aware. But I will give you the opportunity if there is some action that you would like to take under either 18 or 19, that you certainly have that option. So hearing none.
Maybe we make a motion. I think we do need to come up with something. I don't know what that is. I have no idea. But, you know, sit down with the county attorney as well. Asking his, you know.
Well, let's get to item number 20. Okay. I think maybe item number 20 is
so. Table 18. For now.
Okay, we've got a motion to table item number 18.
Okay.
In stereo, the motion was from Commissioner Matthews. The second was from Commissioner Basham. Any further discussion on 18, item number 18? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it. Motion carries. Under item number 19. I want to give equal opportunity. So is there any action the court wishes to take under item 19?
I'd like to table 19 as well for the moment. I can't read these receipts well enough, but I'd like to table it for now.
Second.
Motion to table item number 19 from Commissioner Matthews and a second from Commissioner Basham. Any further discussion on item number 19? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. Ayes have it. Motion carries. Item number 20 is to consider establishing a county policy to address expenditures authorized as personal reimbursement. And again, I try to be as efficient with our time as we can be. If the court is not supportive of trying to establish this policy, there's no reason that I would want to put the pressure on Mr. Wood to help work this because it is in part supportive of his department. But it also it gives some guidance and direction to elected officials as to, you know, how we do reimbursements. I believe he has some good resources for some examples out there that we could bring back to propose to the court. And then maybe give a little bit within that policy, give a little bit more clear direction as to the utilization of county purchasing capabilities, whether that be the Amazon account, commercial credit cards that our elected officials and department heads have available to them. And much like Mr. Latham pointed out, that would put purchases above and beyond reproach, that those individuals might not go back and return something, because even if they did, that funding gets credited back to the county, not to someone directly. And I'm not saying that anybody has done that, but it's a level of control over our spending processes. Is that what you had in mind, Commissioner Basham?
Yeah, I think I'd like to have some examples brought back to the court. Let's look at them, see some options on them. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Taylor, are you good?
Yes. Oh, I agree. There needs to be a policy, and we need to include in that policy any claim for employment attribute to that, in that. Because there is some gainful employment that is done that where county equipment, vehicle, uniform, whatever, it needs to encompass all that. I mean, if you're going to do it, you need to do it. You know, I mean, we had to buy a uniform when I was highway patrol. You wanted to work off duty, you had to have a separate total uniform. You know, of course, they didn't check it. It's not like it was in the tag or anything, but you had to have one on record, you know, where the state, the state gave you the uniform, but you couldn't use the state equipment. You couldn't use the state's property for gainful employment. So, yeah, I mean, I think that needs to be encompassed inside that policy somehow. Yes.
Sounds like a great time to bring up our handbook that we haven't in over a year and a half been sitting on a shelf. So, because I know a lot of that was addressed in the proposed handbook.
And I did go back and pull that up, start looking at what areas I think maybe we need to delve into a little bit more. And then I'm also supportive of, I think there should be an elected official department head's guide, and then an employee handbook. So the the employee handbook is the employee handbook, applies to everyone. Department head and elected official guide is a guide to help them with the handbook and maybe to give them some direction from the court without micromanaging or infringing upon their abilities or their statutory authorities as an elected official. I think that would help help us a lot. So we will re-engage that.
Yeah, because just short of us getting copies of every invoice, every expense reimbursement, because there's quite a few of them on this month's bills to be paid, reimbursements. As a court, unless we go pull that, we don't have a clue what those are, so we have to rely, and it's unfair to leave that on our auditor's department to make those decisions. They need to be very clear, though, so that when we're submitted with the bills, we know they've been vetted. They've met all the rules, and we can approve those. I mean, even if it's a $20 reimbursement, we should feel comfortable that it is past all the. That fair enough? I mean, you need clear understanding of.
I think that captures
what to take back and what to not. Because there's half a dozen to 10 reimbursements in this particular batch of bills.
Okay, I think I feel like I've got a good understanding of the court's direction under item number 20. Not looking for a formal action, but if the court wishes to make a formal action under item number 20, I would entertain that motion. Okay. Hearing none, Ms. Newton, if you'll note under item number 20, discussion only. Moving on to item number 21, pay bills. We've had bills presented in the amount of $1,805,695.07. And in full disclosure, given the previous conversations we've had, I did submit two reimbursement forms. One was for travel to two meetings over in Belton, and one was for a building inspection that we conducted last December as part of the purchase of our building over in Coppers Cove. At that time, we did not have a commercial credit card, so I placed it on my personal credit card and provided those documents to include my credit card statement, as well as the original estimate and the invoice as part of that reimbursement to the auditor. So I just want to make that clear, because we just went over this. We've had this discussion, and I didn't want to be the pot calling the kettle black. So I wanted to, you know.
I have one other. We have a, I think it was $4,000 for Art Texas. Where are we in that process?
Right now, there's the draft review that is with the Texas Historical Commission.
Okay.
There was a period of time where the Texas Historical Commission did not have a person to do reviews for our area. So they were at a pause. So they've not billed us since last fiscal year. I mean, it's been a while. So this was part of their next billing step in their engagements with the Texas Historical Commission in getting the draft review. And hopefully I will have an update for you, maybe even before the next meeting, but certainly by the next meeting, on what the timeline looks like moving forward with the courthouse master plan.
Okay, that would be good. I make a motion to pay bills.
Got a motion to pay bills from Commissioner Matthews.
Second
from Commissioner Taylor. Any further discussion on item number 21? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Just looking at a couple notes. Reports. Commissioner Matthews.
Wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. Y'all travel safe, drive friendly, and play with everybody you said. That's it.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Commissioner Whittle.
Ditto.
Thank you, sir. Commissioner Basham.
Yeah, I want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. And it's good to be back. Good to see you.
Yes. Both
of you
back.
I want to. Thank you. Appreciate it.
And Commissioner Taylor.
I wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. Everybody go eat too much and feel miserable for a couple of days, probably like I'm going to do. Thankful we got the rain.
Amen.
Yes.
You skipped over that part. Just so
I did, right. Commissioner. Thank you.
Couldn't let you down, brother.
Lord, thank you for the rain.
Other than that, that's it.
Very good. Thank you. Just a couple things I'd like to touch on. For the first time in 15 years, the University of Texas will be hosting Texas A&M over the Thanksgiving holidays. Commissioner Basham, I will extend to you a box of Kleenex ahead of time. Okay. All right. Very good. I think it's incredible that the state has come back and put a longstanding tradition back together. And regardless of the outcome, I just hope it's a good competitive game because it reflects well on the state of Texas. Commissioner Basham has been not around as frequently lately, so my thoughts and prayers go out to him. But I want to give some kudos to him specifically. With the boiler in the jail, We had discussed some options and what it would take to replace that. In his endeavors in doing some research and finding some vendors that did boiler repair, he has, I think, made great advancements. If I understand correctly, they had to turn the heat down in the water. It was getting so hot. Is that an accurate statement? So Captain McClain, don't want to leave you out of that either. That cooperative effort, saved us potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars, and I think we are making great strides in some of our maintenance issues. So, want to acknowledge.
That is good for everybody in court and everybody had a hand in this. It's I appreciate it. I appreciate all y'all's help as well. Thank you.
You know, if I may, and, Judge, I think that one of the things that Commissioner Basham gave out that he reached out to and said would give us a chance. I think if any issues going further, that's the vendor we should use. That young man was Johnny on the spot every day. I got a phone call every afternoon of exactly what he had done, where he thought the price range was going to be, how he was going to try and cut it tomorrow. I mean, very astute in doing his job. And I think that also made it in a positive light.
Thank you. And I'm sure Mr. Basham will take you up on that. I think he's been pretty pleased as well. And finally, on a sad note, Jerry Duncan passed away this past weekend. Close family friend. Her husband was the commissioner for Precinct 2 for 21 years. It's hard losing good people. And if y'all knew the neighborhood that we grew up in, with kids ranging from about 16 to 6 years old, riding bicycles and knocking on doors at night when we shouldn't have been, and doing more tricking than treating. She was just, she put up with a lot of chaos, and they don't make them like her anymore. So keep the Duncan family in your thoughts and prayers, please. With that, we do have a closed meeting scheduled. So pursuant to Texas Government Code 551.071, the Commissioner's Court will conduct a closed meeting to consult with the attorney regarding pending litigation and a matter subject to attorney-client confidentiality, to include, but not limited to, that case of the County of Coryell versus Purdue Pharma et al. Coming out of that, there's potentially two actions that the court might take. One would be to consider a 207K exemption policy, and then going back to item number 7, which again is to consider the release of the construction bond for phase 1 and 2 of Twin Caverns. So with that, we will reconvene in the front conference room at 11:20. And at this time, we are in recess. Thank you.